You're listening to Berkeley Liberation Radio, 104.1 FM. On the internet, you can listen to the live stream, berkeleyliberationradio.net. We're here with the show Radio Autonomía, Zapatismo in the Bay, and we're continuing our interviews and our show here today about insurrection and solidarity in the current context. So we're here with a comrade from Egypt who is from Egypt, but is also from here in many ways. He's a dear comrade for us. So we want to start out just asking you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what your connections to the Bay Area are.
My name is Luna Darwish. I'm from Egypt. I live in Egypt most of my life, but before the revolution started, for the 4 years before, I've been living in the U.S., and for the 2 or 3 years before, I was living in Davis, and between Davis and the Bay Area, and I've been involved in the occupation movement on campuses in the UC and some of the Oscar Grant actions in Oakland especially. And that's on a very emotional level, the Oscar Grant actions and the Oscar Grant movement that came out of the Oscar Grant. What happened to Oscar Grant is a very, very important part of how I see things here.
Okay. Great. And, it's significant that you're here now, that you've just returned to the Bay Area after how long that you've been away?
15 months away.
Okay. Yes. So when did you leave the Bay Area, and just tell us a little bit about what made you leave 15 months ago? Why 15 months ago?
I mean, when you first heard about having a protest on the 25th of Jan in Egypt, 2011 in Egypt, but okay, it's gonna be a big protest. It looks good, but nobody was expecting that big. I mean, we're expecting something big because Tunisia happened first and people are inspired, but in the end we're expecting just a few hundreds to be in the streets, or maybe thousands, which is amazing. But it turned out to be way bigger, and the police turned out to be way more stupid than we thought. So the police attacked people in different cities, killing some of them, and this erupted into turned into this movement of anger of everybody going to the streets in bigger and bigger numbers. They usually use death and basically weapons to make people fear going to the streets, and usually most of the time it leads to more and more people actually going to the streets for standing for their comrades. So I tried to go back for the 28th, which was supposed to be the day of anger protest day, but I couldn't because I was here in the US, there was no place, la la. And in the end I made it on the 7th of Feb to Cairo. I went directly to Tahrir Square, of course. The city looked way different than when I left it. It was extremely different on all levels. On one side, having the army in the streets and in control of everything. On the other, seeing people taking over, their country. It was just amazing seeing all these popular checkpoints, people securing their own neighborhoods, taking care that everything is going well, making sure what's happening, because the police was attacking different neighborhoods, and seeing people this sense of pride and sense of ownership that I've never seen before in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And since then I stayed in Egypt most of the time, and that was my first trip to the Bay again.
Great. Well, I know everybody's really excited to have you back, and there's been so much that you've already shared with us about the amazing experience, the ongoing experience of the Egyptian Revolution. But the news we get here, short of what comes directly from, comrades that send direct messages, it's full of misconceptions, full of misinformation. We know the mainstream media has done everything it can to distort the story of what's happening, simplifying it, polarizing, different sectors. And, this question of these misconceptions of how the narrative, how the story of the Egyptian Revolution has been transmitted is really central. And for us as a collective that is focused on alternative media, right, on really taking control of some tiny bit of media to create a space for, another kind of conversation, we were hoping that maybe you could just comment on some of maybe two or three of sort of the main misconceptions that you've seen circulating, and talk about sort of what really happened and is happening.
So, I may tell kind of an abbreviated version of what the media usually say. So, the story is that a guy made a Facebook event, and then Egyptians found that awesome and joined the event and went to the streets, especially to Tahrir Square. They didn't go anywhere else. And they went to Tahrir Square, and they had awesome banners and awesome signs, very funny ones, and had weird outfits, basically. And then Mubarak stepped down after 18 days, and since then the revolution succeeded and everything is happy and fun. This definitely is not the story. The story is way more complicated. we can, like, actually it's historical one. We can go back, like, talking about, like, the struggle for years and years, but at least we can talk about the struggle for the last 10 years of people working for against Mubarak's regime on one side, and a very, like, for democracy, against dictatorship. On the other side, the labor movement that was just, like, strike after strike. We had, like, at some point we'd have, like, I don't know, 300 strikes in a month, and, like, that was, like, not covered in American and European media at all. And then, yeah, there was a Facebook event, but after a great revolution in Tunisia that made people feel that there is hope, that actually we can make it happen. It's not like we'll go to the streets and get beaten up for nothing, but we go to the street, get beaten up and maybe killed and whatever, but we make something happen and we have the power to make things happen. So people, yeah, went to the street, and yeah, the 25th of January was mostly, like, you know, the middle class kids went to the streets. But then in two cities, and all over the country, not only in Cairo, and but in few cities, the police was very brutal. In Cairo, actually, on the 25th, the police was not that brutal. They did not kill anybody. There were, like, a lot of injuries, but nobody was killed. But in Suez and Alexandria, they killed people. Mm-hmm. And that made people angry, and made the right people angry, the people who are more harmed by Mubarak's regime economically and, as you know, and, like, physically by the police state. Made them very angry and made them feel like, okay, we can't stop. We can't just, like, sit there. And literally all classes were in the streets, I mean, except for the very rich, of course. And they were in the streets taking their own neighborhood. And even the story usually focuses on what happened in the squares. Actually, in the first 3 days, which is important, that people took every neighborhood. They went to their own neighborhood, burned down the police station, did what they needed to do every, like, neighborhood. If they had the party that was in power back then, Works Party, called NDP, they burned down the headquarters, they burned down every office they had around the country. They basically kind of destroyed the infrastructure of the police state. I mean, I'm sure people did not get together and discuss, you know, let's destroy the infrastructure of the police state, but really, like, the hate of these symbols, of these symbols that have been oppressing us for so long, made people go directly to them and, like, destroy them and then see what they're going to do. So on the 28th, by then, a lot of people were killed, a lot of people were injured. There were, like, huge battles, impressive battles and impressive bravery from people, from everybody. And by the 28th in the night, people made it to the squares simply because they actually already ended the battles in every neighborhood. It was done. So let's go to the square and get together and see what we're going to do. And by that day, there was no police in the streets. There was no police in the police stations because there were no police stations. There's nowhere. I mean, that just disappeared. And all of a sudden, the issue became how to govern this new space that's not, like, policed anymore, mm-hmm. in a country that used to be very, very policed. So how to govern it, what to do to get rid of Mubarak and advance the revolution, what demands do we have, what do we want of this country to be. So people made it to the squares, and, like, events folded. I mean, they happened, like, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with the videos, like, of the camels and the horses coming to Tahrir Square and stuff like that. All these, like, crazy battles happened, and people proved amazing bravery back, and that made the revolution continue. And by the time I went there, the violence was already done. I mean, of the 18 days was already done. And people stayed in the square, did different stuff, had different plans. And Mubarak still didn't step down. And I remember on the 11th and on the 10th of February, people realized, okay, Mubarak is not stepping down soon. I just gave this horrible speech and saying that he loves us and stuff like that, but he's not stepping down. So, okay, we need to escalate. And for a moment, there was this resistance in the square of, like, in Tahrir, I was in Tahrir, to leave the square. People felt like if we left the square, everything's going to be destroyed. And others, or minorities, thought that, like, we need to expand to win anything. And there was these rumors going around the country that anybody who gets close to either the headquarters of the telecommunication system of, like, the state, or close to the presidential palace of, like, in two blocks, get, like, shot dead. And even though people decided in the morning of the 11th of Feb that they have to march there, that day was, like, impressive amount of people. I mean, like, millions of people in the streets everywhere around Egypt, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't doing enough harm to the state to actually sacrifice Mubarak, basically. Mm-hmm. And we have been having, like, 4 days of worker strikes in different positions, including in different places, including the Suez Canal, which is very, very important for the trade around the world, basically. Mm-hmm. So it was like people were trying to kind of make it very hard for the state to go on and like for the system to go that way. But at the same time, it wasn't enough. So the last push was going and marching to different places that are important for the system, for the regime. And I was part of a group that marched to the palace, the presidential palace. And we were like around like 150 people who were like fighting our way out of Tahrir because people didn't want us to get out because everybody was like, if you go out, the square is going to be cleared, nothing's going to happen. If you all leave, it's like everybody felt that we'll all leave and everybody and things going to dissolve and the revolution is going to die. But we're like 150 people, we're like so upset, and other people did the same, apparently, we knew later. And we went out of Tahrir and we started a march going from one side of Cairo to the other, to the presidential palace. We went through every tiny neighborhood, especially poor neighborhood, to get more and more people on board. And by the time we made it 6 hours later, and by the time we made it through Cairo, we were about 150,000 people. And we went to, basically the idea was like to block the presidential palace and take it over, which is like very classic, you know, it's like classic revolutionary stuff. I don't know, we didn't know what to do. So we went there, and by the time we make it there, apparently the pressure was enough from every side, from the workers' side, from the streets, I mean, from every city, that things were like evolved enough that the regime decided, okay, let's get rid of Mubarak, it's not working. And 15 or like 20 like minutes into when you made it to the palace, we heard Mubarak's like stepping down, the speech of Omar Suleiman stepping down, saying that Mubarak stepped down. It was like this amazing moment. I mean, going to this like posh neighborhood where the palace is, people from every balcony were like cursing at us, calling us traitors, calling us spies, calling us like all crazy shit, throwing stuff at us, and like were very, very hostile to us. But when Mubarak stepped down, they all came to the streets to celebrate with us. And since then, we learned actually that this is like kind of like the pattern. Mm-hmm. People don't like what you do, but when you win, they say, okay, like we like that. Okay, we're going to claim that with you. And first, it was very frustrating to see because like, okay, you were not on board. That was like you were against us, you were attacking us. But later, I mean, after a time, you discovered that it's actually the best thing, that it means that people wanted that, but were not ready to sacrifice for it. Mm-hmm. But when it's happened, they reclaim it and become something that everybody agrees on, that Mubarak was shit. Because, like, we don't want him, and, like, he has to go. So, but the story doesn't stop here. Usually the official story stops here, that on the 11th of Feb, Mubarak steps down, and the Egyptians live, like, happily ever after. We didn't. We had, like, we live under, basically, the old regime, but now presented by the Supreme Council of Armed Forces, who we call SCAF, who are like basically the armed forces generals, who Mubarak appointed, Mubarak, like, I don't know, they're trained by Mubarak and everything. And they've been trying to make things look a bit better, but at the same time maintain the same system without no sacrifice at all of any radical changes. Mm-hmm. And every change that happened since then until now, actually, as many people died since Feb 11 by the hand of the army and the police, since Feb 11 until now, that they died in the 18 days. So, I mean, the extreme violence is still going on, but in a different way and in different events. But in the same time, these, like, deaths were not just, like, going for nothing. Everything we got since February 11, 2011, until this moment happened only because people were in the streets. People, the politics people were always like going and having negotiations, having, you know, trying to get some parts of the pie, some, you know, reforms, and they were never succeeding. And she's like, she's amazing. She's like, they couldn't get even the most stupid reforms. The only time even reforms happened were in the streets. Mm-hmm. But in the streets where people, okay, we want that reform, but we know what we really want. We want to topple that regime, want to change everything. And the simple slogan that's been going since the beginning of the revolution to this moment, bread, freedom, social justice, and that's like what they want. So yeah, we can get reforms on the way, it's not bad, but we know what we want and we're going for it. So that's basically kind of like a different story than the one we usually like hear on Fox News.
Yeah, and it's absolutely both refreshing and inspiring to hear that story, you know, knowing that it is the story. So, you know, this question of violence is really always contentious. And we wanted to hear your thoughts a little bit about this text that circulated in the fall, you know, this letter from Cairo that circulated in the fall as the Occupy movement was, you know, really growing in the United States. And it was directed, you know, to us here, basically. And this was a really key moment when debates about violence and tactics in the Occupy movement were really exploding, right? There was a lot of debate about, you know, violent tactics, diversity of tactics, the place of violence, the need for pacifism, you know, all of this. You know, not only here in the United States with the Occupy movement, but around the world with this sort of global insurrection, this question is the one that comes up over and over again and tends to just polarize in really significant ways. So can you talk a little bit about this letter from Cairo, because it treats this question of violence very directly, because I think this is one of the big misconceptions about sort of what has played out with the Egyptian revolution. So talk a bit about the statement, the letter from Cairo, about the purpose of the statement and sort of the effects that you think that it's had, you know, both in Cairo and in Oakland and